At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, February 10th, 2022. It is the Beating the Book podcast, the last mega pot of the year. It's Gil Alexander, live from the D, where Mike Palm is absent today. Are we allowed to say why Mike is absent? Todd, do you know? Are we allowed to say why?
I don't know about the allowances or disallowances.
All right. In that case, Mike is a new father, so there you go. That's why Mike is not here with us. We assume that's the reason. Congratulations to Michael Palm. Todd is in the his mom's cork attic there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You good, Todd?
I am not a new father as far as I know.
No, that is correct. Yes. And for those who are wondering,
or an old father either,
can you tell the bridge story? Did you tell the bridge story on the podcast last week, or was that on the radio?
At the way end, I was just talking about where the casino is that I go to every night. My office is literally a mile or two from my house, and I drive directly over that bridge, and then I park, and then I drive back at 1 o'clock in the morning after the late West Coast games. I drove home at 1 o'clock in the morning the night before. And my friend Sean said, "Now you broke the bridge. That's just great." Now at 7 o'clock in the morning, the bridge fell down.
And we can laugh about it because nobody died, right? Nobody died.
Nobody died.
Okay, what's the name of the bridge in Pittsburgh?
I think it's called the Fern Hollow Bridge. Think of it just the Regent Square Bridge to get over Regent Square. But it's a real pain in the neck because now to go to my office, I got to go all the way around.
Oh, man.
There's no more bridge there. Well, it's a real pain. I was thinking, is the universe trying to tell me there's something wrong with going over to my office and watching games?
We're glad you're okay.
It was very interesting.
Our guest for Super Bowl 56. Nobody is more appropriate to have as a guest for the Super Bowl than Rufus Peabody, everybody. Rufus on the show. Thank you, Rufus, for being on the podcast for the second time this season. Appreciate it.
And second time in studio.
That's right. Second time in studio. By the way, if I'm sounding a little weird, it's because I was just let out of quarantine, and I thought I was over this COVID thing, and all of a sudden, it's like the revenge of the universe on me, and I can't breathe all of a sudden. So if I pass out in the middle of the show, you'll know why.
So, Gil, should I put my mask over the earphones or over the mic?
What's
proper protocol here?
No, I'll be fine.
So you know, the people are not booing. That's Roo. They're saying Roo for Rufus, the crowd, you know.
The crowd.
That's right.
Big crowd.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to get through our prop bets. We're going to talk a little in-game props. We're going to talk, I will anyway, exotic props offshore, because that's what people are here for. They want to know about the anthem and about Eminem and Dre and Mary J. Blige, and I'm all here for it. That's what I'm here for. As far as Super Bowl 56 is concerned, I can tell you're both very excited about that portion. Super Bowl 56, the Bengals and the Rams. This is toggled between 4 and 4.5. There is a 3.5 out there now.
Really?
But yeah, it's toggled between 4 and 4.5 the whole time here. It's 4 now, consensus, in favor of the Rams. Total is down at 48.5. It opened at 50, I believe. Got down to 49.5, 49, now 48.5. It has stayed at 48.5 for a long time also. And so, Rufus, we'll start with you just on the line and the total itself. Do you have any bets? Did you make a bet? Do you plan on making any bets?
I do not have a bet. If I get a good Rams money line at some point, I might make that bet. I lean Rams, but I have been focused on props, and the line is pretty close to my number. Yeah. My number is -4.5 without any home field advantage to the Rams. You know, I've heard different arguments of how much home field advantage they should get.
And let me just say this about your money, your call on the money line on the Rams, that we say this every year. For the last quarter century, this is what Chrissy Andrews estimates, for about the last quarter century, for whatever reason, people, the casual bettor, bets the Super Bowl differently than they do dogs during the regular season. So during the regular season, betting behavior is usually take the dog plus the points. For whatever reason, and no one really knows why, the last 20, 25 years, when betting the Super Bowl, people tend to take the dog on the money line, and what it creates is this artificial muting of the favorite on the money line. So I remember like a few years ago when the Patriots were playing the Falcons, for instance, was at 3 or 3.5, a little smaller than this spread, but you could get like offshore the Patriots line, money line got all the way down to like minus 140, if I recall. So that's the kind of opportunity you're talking about, I guess.
The Super Bowl middle has existed for a long time. It's because people, you have a lot of people that are betting like once a year just on the Super Bowl.
Right.
And those kind of people, they don't want to bet, they don't want to bet a favorite on the money line. They want to bet favorite on the spread because, you know, they would like that regular payout. They don't want to lay minus 170. But if they're betting the underdog, they want that sort of lottery payout. The bang for the buck.
They also don't understand the point spread. Many people do not still understand the point spread. Have you ever tried explaining the point spread to a novice? It really doesn't seem like a very complicated topic, but try explaining it to people, and you will very, very quickly understand the trouble that human beings have with mathematics.
So the question is, how do you explain it? I feel like different people explain it different ways.
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, maybe it's just your explanations.
Well, that's a good point, Rufus, but I don't think it's accurate in this case because I'm actually pretty articulate in explaining things.
He's not questioning your being articulate or not. He's saying, how does one explain that to the novice, right? I'll tell you how I would explain it. I would say, oh, if the spread is 3.5, what that means is that the team that is favored by 3.5 must win by 4 or more points for you to cash your bet. Whereas if you bet on the underdog, they must win outright, or even if they lose by 3 or fewer, you will win your bet. That's how I would explain it.
Oh, you know what I would say? I'd say that number next to it, you just add or subtract that number to your team's total and compare it to the other teams, and whichever's higher wins.
Oh, you see, that'll confuse people.
Well, that's just like minus, you know, your team's total, -3.5 against their total.
That sounds so logical to you, but that would confuse me. If I didn't know what you were talking about, I'd be like, what? Yeah.
I've found giving them examples is the only way that it really penetrates their brains at times. For instance, if it's a 4-point line and I say, if the final score is 21-17,
oh, that's a good point.
Who would win?
Yeah.
No. And then if the score is 21-18, who would win? If it was 21-16, who would win?
You know,
that seems to be the only way they get it.
I hope it's 21-18. I think I have an exacta for 18.
Do you?
Okay. Rams 18.
So did I ever tell you the story about me being behind the book at the South Point during the Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl when it was – so the Patriots
– Oh.
So, yeah. So this has to do with you.
I had the Patriots to score exactly nine ticket when it was 28-9.
That's
yeah.
my whole story.
Okay. Oh.
So I used to do it those days. Now I do the full betcast for VSiN. But in those days, I only used to do the first half. And so after the first half, I would I didn't want to travel home because I'd miss the second half. So I'm like, where am I going to hang out for the second half? This place is a madhouse. Oh, I'll go back with Chrissy and Jimmy, Vaccaro, and Vinny, and I'll watch the Super Bowl and quiet back there. So I go back there. Remember, it was 28-3 at halftime, famously. It's the only Super Bowl where people remember a mid-game score more than they do the final score. So it's 28-3, and the Patriots score a touchdown to make it 28-9, and I think Gostkowski missed an extra point, if I'm not mistaken.
They didn't go for two there?
They did not go for two, yeah. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but that's not the point. They ended up on 9. And so I'm back there, and Chris Andrews, who runs the South Point Hotel Casino, their computer back there, they can look at all their liability for any number of their hundreds of props. And so all of a sudden, like, he was all jovial, and then all of a sudden, he, like, his face turns a little, like, sour. And I'm like, what's wrong? Like, I know him well enough where I can tell something's wrong. He goes, and you know his face, he goes, we really don't want this to end up on the 9. And I go, why? He goes, let's just say we're in for six figures if the Patriots end up on the nine. I go, really? Do I
you
know?
You mean nine exactly?
Nine exactly.
20.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Keep
nine.
In mind, it in real time, it only ended up being 15 minutes because the Patriots famously came back and not only got off the nine but won the game. But for those 15 minutes of real time, not even football time, Chrissy's dying back there. I'm like, do I know the person who has the nine? He goes, yeah, you do.
What was the odds? What was the odds for them landing the nine?
I don't know. I tweeted out the ticket after it lost, actually.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, I had a little sweat for a little while. It was pretty high. I don't remember exactly. If you could check my Twitter history, you can find it.
So uncommon. I guess nine is that you get there with three field goals. But that's about it.
Three field goals or a touchdown, miss extra point, and field goal.
Right.
Well, it was 28-9 for brief amount of time, and then it wasn't anymore. But that was I don't think I ever told you that story. Todd, do you have a play on either the side or total?
I mean, I'm not going to play it pregame. I mean, I don't play any of the games pregame pretty much, so why would I play this one pregame? I'm going to play it under. I mean, if I had to force me, I would play the under 48.5.
Why?
Or I would play the Cincinnati team total under 21.5. That's probably the best one that I would play, would be the Cincinnati under 21.5 team total.
Why is this night different from any other night is what you're basically saying.
Exactly. It's a Manishtana kind of deal.
First of all, it's Manishtana.
Manishtana. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask Rufus. Can I ask Rufus a quick question
please,
about props?
Do whatever you want to
kind
do.
Of interesting. Rufus, one of the things, I mean, I don't play a lot of props. I played more props this year, but I don't really play a lot of props in general. But the thing that I always wonder is when you're playing your props, aren't they a lot of them correlated to what's happening in the game? So can you get in a situation where, let's say you've made 100 props, if one team doesn't win, you're going to lose 80% of them or something? Does that happen, or is there some non-correlation ability for you to have so many different props that the result of who would win does not really come into effect? And if that is the case, if the former is the case, then wouldn't you be just rather better betting the teams themselves?
So that's a really good question. I think it's one that's kind of complicated, and I don't know all the exact correlations. Certainly, a lot of the props are based on what the point spread and the total are, and so the way we anticipate the game playing out as a result of that. So, for example, the Bengals are a 4.5-point underdog, which means a 4.5-point underdog on average, when they have the ball, will be trailing by 3.1 points. Every snap. On their average snap, they'll be down 3.1 points. I know that sounds like a larger number than you'd expect, right? Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, if the line was pick, even if the line's pick, the average, the team that is pick is going to be trailing on average on their snaps because, think about it. The game starts at 0-0. A team goes up 7. Oh, now the other team's down 7. They have the ball down 7. So because you're getting the ball after the other team does, right? So,
right. You're saying in a pick game they're gonna be down more than they're up?
When they have the ball, yeah. Both teams will be down more than they're up. When they have the ball. Think about it. If you've never thought about it, it's kind of counterintuitive, but it makes sense. Because it's you get the ball after the other team has it. They score, then you know. Anyway, we're getting off track here.
Yeah.
Yes, there are definitely things that are correlated, but there's also things that are sort of and I don't want to say anti-correlated, but correlated the other way. So, for example, if I'm against a team's passing game, let's say I was against, the Bengals' passing game and against all the Bengals' wide receivers. If I knew that Jamar Chase had 9 catches for 170 yards, then my expectation for T. Higgins is going to be less than not knowing that. So there's negative correlation there, right? So... certainly you can get one of these really bad outcomes, which basically bad outcome for me means things happening that are exciting for the average fan. I root for the most boring Super Bowl ever, typically. But most of these, I bet enough esoteric stuff and that I feel like, even if unless it's like a crazy offensive game, I'm not in that much trouble. I mean, obviously, I could still be in trouble, but but it's not 100% correlated to a huge offensive game.
All right, let me step in here before you ask 55 more questions, Todd. And let's just establish for the audience some street cred here for Rufus. Now, I know you downplayed this when you were on a numbers game earlier this week, But the reason that Rufus is appropriate for the Super Bowl, perhaps more than he's appropriate every week, but perhaps more than anything, you know, any other time of year, is because this was Super Bowl props was when you were back with your team back in the day. This was kind of your week. This was your thing, right? And you made out very well doing this. You acknowledged you weren't the first person to do this, but you were the first person, at least to my knowledge, that got notoriety for doing that. Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Yeah. And do you find that the opportunities are fewer and further between, or do you think that there's still quite a few of those opportunities still?
I think there's still quite a few opportunities. The opportunities are not as large as they used to be.
Not as large.
Not as large. It's
the mistakes aren't as big.
Right. Right. You don't have the same gravy you used to have in terms of sportsbook prop openers. So I think there's a lot. There's books have more surface area to defend now, especially with these same game parlays and stuff like that, which honestly, I'm sure there's a ton of value to be found there.
Yes.
It's not something I've really looked into. I'm at the point where I'm betting props, I would say once a year, but I actually bet them the last 2 weeks also. So a few times a year, just because props, it's a lot of manual work. There's a ton of art to it. But there are, I think opportunities are a little bit different. They're smaller, but a lot of it now is betting very close to game time after the public has driven up prices. So the public loves betting on things to happen. They like betting receivers to go over, players to score touchdowns, on a safety, on a defensive or special teams touchdown. And so the opportunities there, especially with marquee players, to sort of bet unders close to game time after the public
like
is
Cooper
driven
Cup
up. Exactly
like Cooper I'm, Cup under receiving yards
right.
You think it's going to get blown way out?
It is. I mean, I of course I think it is. I mean, he's averaged 118 or 117 receiving yards per game.
So not to interrupt your flow, but that's the biggest bit of macro advice we can give, right? Generally speaking, if you're thinking about betting over on those kinds of guys and those kind of props, you should have already bet them.
Yeah, and if you want to bet Cooper Kupp over, the best time to bet it is right now.
If you wanted to go under, wait as long as you
yes.
can. And especially so, wouldn't you say, because we now have more and more states, and just this week, right, just not this week, but just this past month, New York and Louisiana are brand new. This is entire new generations of people that have not bet illegally, right? Have not bet with a local bookie, have not bet offshore, who have waited for their legal opportunity to bet. And this is their first crack at doing this stuff. That's a total overwave of
yeah.
bettors, you would imagine.
And it's an unknown. It's an unknown how much it's going to affect these books' pricing, how much they're going to respond and say, oh, you know what? We're going to leave. You know, we know that people betting the over, we know we have the edge there. Let them bet the over. We'll take on liability versus they'll say, you know what? This is too much liability. Let's move this number. Because I think the European books, the DraftKings, FanDuels of the world, BetMGMs, Caesars, they're, I don't know if I should call Caesars European. I don't know. Are they? Well, we all are Caesars. But those books tend to, especially with prop markets, they tend to be less responsive to bets in terms of moving their prices. And they, you know, like you can bet something, it won't move. They just will limit you or something like that. I don't know. Versus books in Vegas, you bet they move the line. You bet they move the line. And so,
yeah,
they obviously are moving lines, but it's less responsive. They're more like, okay, we have our algorithms, boom, we're sticking with this a little more.
Yeah. Whereas Vegas reacts
yeah.
pretty dramatically. Okay. So,
by the way, I would question Gilly whether New York is going to be that big a deal. I mean, when I lived in New York, everybody was betting already. So it's not like, now granted in Louisiana maybe, but in New York it seems to me that everybody was already betting. Now maybe they're going to all bet legally
no,
now.
No, that's my whole point is that they're betting legally. What's the point of otherwise?
I thought you meant that they wouldn't have had access to this kind of stuff in the past.
No, I'm saying in the prop markets that we're talking about that are largely legal, right, that we're talking about, that they could be affected in an entirely more dramatic way than they ever have been before. I don't think that's a nutty statement.
I didn't say it was nutty. I just think that theoretically, I think a lot more people were exposed in New York than you would think otherwise. But
I'm
wrong.
I wasn't trying to be naive about the fact that they didn't find other ways to bet or maybe they crossed the state line in some cases. But I'm saying there is a large group of that population let's say if it's, I mean, they just made $1.6 billion in legalized betting in a three-week span, or $1.6 billion in handle in New York. It just destroyed New Jersey in 3 weeks.
How much of that was the free play promos, though?
Maybe.
That's the big question.
That's the big question. But it's also not a standard Sunday of football either. Imagine if they have 16 games to bet on, what that number is going to be like. And I guess all I'm saying, Todd, is...
But Meltzer made a very good point that per capita it was actually lower than Louisiana, which was kind of interesting.
Which is now online, too, as I just mentioned. So what I'm saying is, of that huge swath of influx, there's got to be a bunch of that, a huge percentage of that, is people who have just
waited. We don't have to. I'm with you. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just throwing it out.
By the way, I do have a pre-flop bet. I have the Bengals at +4.5. It's not a big bet. I took it. Could I see the Rams crushing him? I could. Could I see the Rams winning? I could. But Burrow has shown me enough, despite his poor offensive line, I'll take the points. So I do have that bet going, just to be clear on my side. Your favorite prop bet. So you're waiting for a lot now, a lot more than you used to, Rufus.
I am waiting
to bet. Of the ones you've made so far, how many have you made so far, first of all?
Ooh.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Well, what percentage of the total that you will make have you made so far? How about that?
How many will you have at kickoff?
How many? I'm trying to think more in terms of volume. I would say I probably... Well, I've only made about a third of the bets I plan to make, or a third of the money down. Yeah, which is very different than what it used to be. Very different. It used to be like 80% was down by this point.
Wow.
So
it's a totally
how things have changed. It is. Yeah. I think I could get 80% of my EV if I just waited till Super Bowl weekend to bet.
When did you figure out that change needed to be made?
Well, it's not that the change needed to be made. It's just that there weren't as many opportunities early.
And then the opportunities presented themselves.
Right. And so I've realized that over the last few years, you know, I might bet something. I think it's a great bet on, you know, when the lines come out, and, you know, game day, I'm getting the same line or better after the, you know, so I'm basically waiting on all my unders, and except for like sort of the niche markets, like first reception length or something like that, where I don't think that's going to get a ton of public action. But in terms of the bigger player markets, you know, the Cooper Cup receiving yards for the game, Cooper Cup, will he score a touchdown?
I'm waiting
on those.
You have a Joe Mixon bet that you made, though, correct?
Or yeah. I bet Joe Mixon under receiving yards.
28.5, what'd you get it at?
I think we got it anywhere between 28.5 and 26.5.
And your thinking on that is?
Why do I like the bet?
Yeah.
Well, my numbers like it. I haven't projected lower. The reason, I guess a big part of that, you know, he has been a much more active part of the receiving game the last few weeks. I'm actually against the Chiefs, maybe not quite as much. I have to like see what that number was there. But I think there is a bit of recency bias. 3 for 27 last week, actually. But they have, those, I guess, with the Chiefs game notwithstanding, have been games where there have been either positive or neutral game scripts for Cincinnati. They've been in the lead, or it's been a close game. Whereas you look in the midseason stretch where they're involved in some blowouts, and he was much less of a factor in the receiving game. And if you look at it, his participation in the receiving game is very, very directly linked to what the score differential is and what the game script is. So in obvious passing situations, Perine's in. So Mixon gets his receptions and his receiving yards when the Bengals are basically leading or the game is very close.
When they're trailing,
yeah. When they're trailing, and you know, when they're trailing, P. Ryan is the guy that is much more involved in the receiving game. So
there you go.
And probably much more involved in the game, period, because they're not running the ball if they're trailing.
Exactly. But it's interesting because you think like, okay, if a team is trailing, you know, they're going to be throwing the ball more. Running back gets receptions from that. But it's actually kind of the opposite with the Bengals. Like, I mean, at least for Mixon.
Yes.
If they're up, Mixon is going to be involved in the passing game.
This is why it's so interesting now with the in-game props, where I find that, you know, when you're looking at the in-game is huge for the line, and it's also huge for the props. So if, you know, if a team is ahead 21-3, you know, and the running back, your primary running back has say 15 yards, they're going to make him only like say 35 for the full game because they know he's not going to be running the ball. Like you just said, and the reason I brought it up now is just because you had that whole discussion about Mixon. Mixon will be out of the game because the Bengals can't run the ball down 21-3 in the third quarter. So, and you see a similar thing with the passing yards. The passing yards number goes way up for a team that's down a lot. They figure, oh my gosh, they're going to have to throw all the time. Now, sometimes they overinflate it. I've been noticing, for instance, when a team's losing big in the first half, say 21-3 is a perfect example. Late in the first half, if a guy has 50 passing yards, his number will be like 260. So they think he's going to get 210 passing yards in the second half because he's going to be chucking it every play. So, I mean, whether that's true or not in a particular game, obviously you have to take each one into account, but it is kind of interesting how the game flow is so much of a part of these props. So I think that was really interesting what you were just telling us about Mixon.
Do you do any in-game wagers like that?
No, I'm stress eating, stress drinking.
Yeah, at that point.
Trying to log tickets that I bet right before the game started too.
How aware, like if you have, what percentage of if you bet 30, can you keep track of all of them in your head, or are you just focused on a few of them, the ones that are the most outlay for you?
No, I mean, basically every play, like, we'll have like a drunk grading sheet open, right, where we can kind of grade, right, and yeah, there'll be many mistakes found the next day. But but basically, you know, where some of us will be grading as things happen.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, shit, we've lost. Oops, bad language.
Todd, you'll figure it out the next day. Some will be mistakes.
Well, yeah. I mean, we go through our tickets one by one and make sure, and people double check everybody else's tickets, that kind of thing. I would feel
you're probably the more reliable of the bunch, I would imagine.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I'm not that detailed.
So much of the props, though, can really come down to like one situation. Like, for instance, if a team is driving with 2:35 left in the first half and they don't get the first down,
right,
and therefore the other team is going to get another chance now at the end of the first half and they're going to be throwing the ball, that's an extra, you know, 50 or 60 yards of passing possibly for a particular passer or for those receivers. So it's very interesting how the game flow is huge.
Do most books now offer this, Todd? I'm not trying to be naive, but here in Vegas, we don't have it. Offshores don't have it in many cases.
Regular season NFL has in-game props, FanDuel, DraftKings. Now,
all of them.
Depending on who you are, you might not be able to bet them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really able to bet them at DraftKings, but the you know, you can, if you're just a regular recreational bettor, you can bet all these things in regular games. So, of course, you could do it for the Super Bowl, but even regular games have it. You know, all these games have it.
All right, here are the props that I have bet already. I'm not sure if I'm adding more. a few of these might not even be there anymore. And in fact, I'll update them for you. One was no touchback on the opening kickoff. This was a complete intel kind of bet. So back in the day with this, I used to go through on shows, oh, this is the percentage of times this kicker kicked into the end zone and resulted in a touchback. This is the kind of times, percentage of times it was deferred on kickoffs, that kind of thing. Pat McAfee had this podcast last year. He kicked in the Super Bowl when he was with the Indianapolis Colts when they played the Saints.
Well, he punted.
Right, but he did the kickoff. They did the opening kickoff.
Was he the kickoff kicker?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
And he, for 30, at least I believe that's the case. Yeah, now you're having me confused, but I believe that's the case.
I'm going to look it up.
For 30, you know, what he basically said was during a regular season game, opening kickoffs, the kickers get to mess around with the football for about 30 minutes. They get to wear it in. They get to kick it. They beat it around. And the ball, by the time the game starts, is, you know, tenderized, if you will. That's my word, not his. In the Super Bowl, that does not take place. You do not
get... But wait, is that good or bad for kicking?
Let me finish and you'll get the whole story. So basically, you don't get to mess around with the football. And when you show up for the opening kickoff, because their whole point with this kick is to just send the ball into the Hall of Fame. So you just show up. You didn't get to mess with the ball for 30 minutes. And he says it's like kicking a brick. And so then as soon as the play is over, they package the ball and they send it to Canton, right? That, or they package it up to be sent to Canton. And so 26 of the last 28 Super Bowls have resulted in no touchback. Now, some of those were back when they kicked off from a different yard line.
Most of them.
But 8 of the last 10, no touchback from the current yard marker.
I have a great story for you.
So that's the story. And so, by the way, like with Harrison Butker, he told this last year before the Chiefs-Bucks Super Bowl, Harrison Butker and was in that game, so it was like plus 270 to not be a touchback. Now it was only like, it was anywhere between like plus 135 and plus 160. And my argument was, anything in plus money based on that kind of intel is still probably a good bet. Now it's a coin flip at William Hill. I wouldn't bet it anymore. Because if Evan McPherson kicks it, he could catch it and it could go into the end zone for all I know. But when it was plus money, if you can still find it plus money, I would bet it, no touchback.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I think I laid a price on it to be a touchback without that intel earlier on. But now that I've heard this, I'm laying off.
Yeah. That's
this reminds me of the Indianapolis Colts versus the Chicago Bears. If you remember correctly, the Chicago Bears had a guy named Devin Hester on the team. I went to Vegas. I was living in LA. I went to Vegas to play for the Super Bowl, and I made one or two prop bets. One of them was that the Bears would never lead in the game. I think it was like plus 175. The Bears will never lead in the game.
Whoopsie.
And I'm thinking the Bears had Rex Grossman at the quarterback position. I had Peyton Manning at the quarterback position. I thought there was a very good chance the Bears would never lead. I also thought the Colts wouldn't be stupid enough to kick it to Devin Hester when he had only returned about 5,000 kicks for touchdowns that year. Well, guess what? They decided to kick it to Devin Hester and then got destroyed the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So I was a very unhappy camper that day about the opening kickoff.
That one lost quick. The other one is I laid, this is not for everybody, but I laid minus 330 on there would not be a missed extra point in this game. Evan McPherson and Matt Gay combined this year, postseason and regular season, 103 for 106. 103 out of 106 on their extra points. And that's 97% plus rate. I know there's more math to it than making it just this simple, but even at a minus 330 price, which converts to about 76%, that's still a good bet to me. Minus 330.
Indoor, too.
Yeah.
Indoor,
exactly.
Well, sort of indoors. Have you been to that stadium, Todd?
Yeah, it's kind of like a carport.
No.
I've been there. Look, I was there and I was cold. Like, it was freaking cold in there. Like, I was there for the Chiefs Chargers game, which is an incredible game, by the way. But
was that the one that was delayed? One of them
Monday
was
night
delayed.
Football.
Yeah, Monday Night Football.
I don't know. I was delayed in getting there because of LA traffic. But,
yeah.
No. So I got there late in the second
Literally
quarter.
A storm landed on top of SoFi.
No, this wasn't that one.
Okay.
This was the
game when it was fourth down at the five-yard line 18 times.
Exactly.
And the guy kept going for it.
Right, it was
smart coaching on both sides. And everybody was like, why don't they just kick field goals?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that game. But it was – I remember also looking at the – I don't know, what do you call it, the little banner, the ribbon on the top of the uprights?
Yeah, it was moving.
It was moving a little bit. So, because the ends are open a little bit. It's a canopy. So, I think temperature has an impact, although I looked at the weather, it's going to be like 70 degrees.
So it's going to be beautiful.
It's going to be like 71.
But
if it was 50 degrees, then that would totally impact kickoffs and extra points.
By the way, what about the one that's minus 500 that the team will defer? I saw that this even got a regular news story in Yahoo. There's no better free money bet than the team will defer minus 500. Or it's somehow worded that the team will, whoever wins the coin toss will elect to defer or something to that effect. And it's minus 500.
That sounds way high.
Well, no, it's too low because every team defers when they don't. Almost every team defers when they win the coin toss.
Is that true? So that almost actually, every team defers now?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
really?
Almost. It's about. That. It's something like 27 out of 28.
Oh, I had no idea. I didn't know it was that high. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, everybody defers. It used to be Bruce Arians used to not defer, but even he defers now. So,
Todd, do you make any prop bets?
I made just a couple, but nothing major. Just like Rams more first downs. There's a couple other ones, but I'm not well enough versed on the props to tell you. You should be following me on the props.
Here is my one sort of PSA every year that we do on the Super Bowl show, and we've done this for over a decade now. When you ask bookmakers what is the prop that most trips up the public. Longtime listeners to the Megapod know where I'm going with this. Rufus, I'm curious your thoughts on this. Everybody offers, you know what I'm about to say?
Three unanswered. There we go.
That's the one. So three unanswered. So the casual bettor, and again, if you're new to this, you'll see this prop. Will a team score three unanswered? Not including extra points, right? Will they have three unanswered scores? And so the yes is like minus 200-ish, and the no is about plus 170. And the average bettor will look at that and be like, three unanswered scores. The no is plus 170. My God, these are two really great teams. How is the no plus 170? I'm totally betting that. But the truth is that it happens all the time. Four unanswered scores, it correctly flips. But three unanswered scores, that is actually priced appropriately. So that's the prop.
So it's about 65% or it's about 62%.
Yeah, that prop is correctly priced. And so people shouldn't go nuts betting the no on that. It could hit, but it's not like there's value on it as it sort of meets the eye kind of thing.
But see, that's another one of these correlated kind of situations, because I'm sure in games that there are more one-sided games, there's probably more of that three in a row thing happening. So that's why I just find a lot of the props to be like, you know, very, very correlated to game. Am I wrong about that, Rufus?
No, I mean, you're right that obviously a blowout's more likely. But even in a closer game, even in a game that's a pick, it's still very likely. Because, and think about, like, think about Bengals-Chiefs, right? One team takes a lead, the other comes back. That kind of thing happens a lot. And what's interesting is that there's, you know, the higher the total, the more chances there are for three unanswered scores. You get more opportunities. But at the same time, the higher the total, the less independent each score is. So, you know, it's sort of these conflicting things, right? Because if you score, then the other team, I mean, it's less likely you're going to have a team that doesn't score for a few possessions.
That's a good point.
But
I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah, that's interesting. The Rufus, did you have any more you wanted to share or that you've done already, or is that the only one, the Mixon one?
Any other? I mean, sure. Like here, you guys talk right now. I'll find something that.
Well,
let me
do my exotic.
Here, I'll give you another one that somebody gave me that is good. This one, the 2 minute warning will land exactly on 2 minutes, is one that a very respected person told me to bet, and it was I think it's like minus 275 or minus 200 in one of the halves and minus 275 in the other half.
That's a bet.
I don't know anything about that one because I don't pay attention to that, but they seem to think it's a really good one.
That is a good bet. Because you just sort of like in your mind's eye, you can already think of how many times does it, you know, does a play go past it and land on like 157 or 156 or 158?
Right, so what percentage do you think that is?
It seems like way, way rarer than that betting line indicates.
I need to, like, query this right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
So you would think it would land maybe, say, 20% of the time as opposed to, you know, where it's being priced more like 30.
Maybe not even 20%, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good bet. Yeah.
I'm literally, like, scrambling to query this right now just so I can sort of see.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I think he's right. I think that's a very good bet. So here's while Rufus is looking that up, and before he provides us with another bet. Here are my thoughts on the exotics, if you will, which are available more offshore than they are. But everyone on this Megapod through the years wants to hear about this. So Mickey Guyton, who I was unfamiliar with, is a country singer. She is singing the national anthem. The national anthem, the only evidence of her singing a national anthem on YouTube, is she did one in front of It was in Washington, D.C. It was in front of some very elaborate orchestration, maybe even the National Symphony Orchestra, for all I know, and it was done at some event, and she sprinted through it. Like, she just, it was like she was double parked outside.
You're telling me 116 or something? Is that what you heard?
She did it in, like, one, I mean, the whole video was 125, so it was under that, right?
I heard 116.
Could be. So the first Super Bowl prop that came out was at 95 seconds, so 135. So you would think, you'd be like, oh, well, she's got to be an under then, right? No. I immediately thought to myself, I'm like, there is no possible way that she is going to sing anything quicker. Like, no way, you know, as quick as she did in that video. She's going to absolutely milk it more than that. 95 seconds is an unbelievably low number for a national anthem. So I said,
What's an average one?
Oh, like around 2 minutes. Like, shallow, okay. Give or take a few seconds. So I said,
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, I said over on this, and now I'm told that it's already at 140. So apparently everybody else had the same exact thinking that I did. So now I'm not sure how much I would bet that anymore, right? Like, it's getting to
a point. Well, I'm playing in-game. I'm doing the in-game on National Anthem.
You're in-gaming the anthem. Yes,
by the dawn's early. Quick, hit the over. Quick.
In-gaming the anthem.
Home of the under.
And then the other one that we've made hay on here through the years is, and I'm not sure how many places you can find this on, because I find this a little scarcer this year than in previous years, just on my sort of anecdotal look. But I know, like, a place like the old Bodogs of the world, Bovada, right, that I think they still have this. If you can find what song will be played first at the halftime show, that's always the big one. We've hit this many years. It is, again, it's Dr. Dre, it's Eminem, it's Mary J. Blige, it's Missy Elliott. It is Kendrick Lamar. It's a whole hodgepodge of hip-hop.
What are they doing? Is it like everybody gets to do a song, or everyone's going to do it together?
I guess. It's like
people don't even know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So, you know, I have some history with these artists in terms of following their careers. To me, there are only two candidates. Only two candidates for what the first song will be. And the only two possible candidates on those are California Love, which was Dre's biggest, which he had with Tupac. And obviously the Super Bowl is being played in California. And then the other one is Eminem's big hit from 8 Mile called Lose Yourself, which is the you only get one shot. People know that song, right?
One opportunity.
What about That's California? Right. What about California girls? Isn't that a Snoop Dogg one?
I have no idea what you're talking about. All right. So so to me, it's only between those two songs. One of those is going to be the opener, and one of those is going to be the close. Today on a numbers game, I said California. I didn't mention Lose Yourself, but I said it's either California Love or, and before I got to say Lose Yourself, Crack, Bill Krakenberger goes, I'll tell you right now, it's not California Love. So my betting advice, based on that reaction from Crack, is that Eminem's Lose Yourself will be the first song played on the Super Bowl halftime
Do you get
show.
Multiple choice on that, on the betting thing? Do they give you like five songs or something?
Yes, they typically give you anywhere between 5 to 8 songs. So
I see.
Lose Yourself, Rufus. I know you do things by the numbers, but can you argue with that unbelievable?
Rufus's model had Love Yourself.
Lose Yourself. It's Lose Yourself.
My model loves itself too much sometimes. That's the problem.
Love Yourself.
Wait, Rufus's model has a lot of love in it. You know, so that's why
I like models, and I like loving myself.
Yeah, who doesn't?
So you know, I'm just gonna leave it at that.
So there it is. Lose Yourself. Lose Yourself. Eminem. That's going to be your first song. Ladies and gentlemen, star of last week's Megapod, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Ortega is with us. Brian, you were phenomenal on, can we hear you on the air, or are you just talking in our ear? Talking in our ear. Okay, so Brian Ortega, who was the star of last week's Man's Guide to Sin City, the Vegas Lifestyle podcast, is in my ear saying that California Love will be the last song. Is that what you're saying? Okay, so we're consensus here. California Love is going to be the last song. Lose Yourself is going to be the first song. So Lose Yourself is the answer to the first song and we stake our Megapod reputation on it.
By the way, we don't have that in Pennsylvania. I think Pennsylvania.
No, that's offshore stuff.
A lot of this stuff is down.
It's offshore stuff.
Unfortunately.
Rufus, did you do the query about the 2-minute warning thing?
I tried to. I feel like I messed it up somehow.
How would you figure that out?
I'm literally looking at the play-by-play and just saying, okay, is there a play where, like, create a dummy variable where the play started exactly 2:00 left in the second quarter?
Yeah.
But I think I didn't need to get rid of penalties and shit like that.
Oh, okay. Do you have one more prop or so you want to share with us?
I mean, I have a lot of props, I bet.
Yeah,
but
please,
the question is,
please spill it.
Okay, I'll share an over, I bet, actually, because that's something that's been bet, basically.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I like Van Jefferson over 2.5 passing receptions at +110.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, his role has been, he's still gotten a lot of snaps and ran a lot of routes the last few weeks. He just hasn't had a lot of catches. And Odell Beckham has gotten a lot more catches than he has. But Odell Beckham's basically in the Robert Woods role.
Yes.
Statistically, they're sort of roles are fairly indistinguishable, at least the last few weeks, what Robert Woods did the first 9 weeks this season when he was healthy. So Van Jefferson's role has certainly, his target share has decreased a lot in recent weeks, but he was banged up a little bit. I mean, I know that McVay said that there was the week against the Niners that Ben Skoronek was in like for a potential game winning drive in like crunch time instead of Van Jefferson. And he said, when asked about it, McVay said, we were just we like Skoronek, we're trying it out. But I don't buy that exactly. I think he was banged up a little bit. I mean, his snap counts are back up the last 2 weeks. And so I think that maybe there's a bit of an overreaction to those sort of weeks where he wasn't really involved as much.
And this is all correctly based on snap counts and more specifically targets.
Yeah. So I look at, I project out snap counts and routes run. And then I project out a guy's targets per route run.
Okay.
And then whether the guy catches the ball or not.
So Van Jefferson over 2.5 receptions?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Which he has not gone over 2.5 in any of his last 4 games.
You getting plus
money? Actually,
he
hasn't gone over a lot recently, but sorry.
Is it plus?
Plus money, yeah.
Plus money.
Plus money.
Okay. I like it. Rufus, the floor is yours.
This is,
that is you want to give.
Well,
man.
Rufus,
what do you think
I hate
about
overs, though.
Cincinnati
I hate and... overs. So this was like, this is an over that... I plug my nose when I bet the over, and I don't bet that much on overs because I feel like, if they lose, I just feel like very bad about myself.
Just to be clear, you're not the guy at the Super Bowl party who, while everybody else is enjoying themselves, you're in the corner on a whiteboard trying to figure out the results of your props. That's not you. You are fully immersed in the drinking and eating of a Super Bowl, and you'll worry about the props afterwards.
Oh, I'm worried about the props while I'm drinking and eating.
Well, okay. So I just wanted to make clear.
It's sort of a combination.
Yeah.
It's basically yes.
Both. Okay. But
I mean, white computer screen.
Why is Rufus so annoyed in the corner? He's trying to figure out if Van Jefferson's going to get a third catch.
Yeah.
I'm drinking and eating during every football game, so if you were wondering about that.
No,
but here's a question I have for you, Rufus.
Did this just happen? The 76ers acquire James Harden? Oh, my goodness, it happened. Is this real?
Oh, my gosh. Let's do the MVP odds. Quick update.
Wait a minute. So it did happen. So listen, this is a brief basketball aside. So listen, on primetime action, I'm telling Kelly Bidlin and Matt Brown, I'm like, how real do you think this Harden and Simmons thing is? And those two guys basically laugh me off the show. They're like, it's less than 0% chance, Gil. And then last night, Matt conceded it was a 3% chance. It is happening. 76ers acquire James Harden in a trade for Ben Simmons. Nets also get Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and 2 first-round picks. did the Sixers just give up everything to get Harden? Good Lord.
Harden's damaged goods. I mean, he's never been a winner anyways. Wow. Why would you want him?
That's what That's what I'm saying with his NBA stuff. Don't laugh me off the show. This shit always happens. Wow.
Watch college basketball. The NBA is no betting association. Can I ask Rufus a quick question?
Please,
what he thinks about? Okay, so the narrative, obviously, of this game, I guess the biggest narrative, and I don't watch all the regular sports talk show nonsense, but I would say probably the regular narrative is, can the Bengals block the LA Rams' fierce pass rush because they don't seem to be able to block anybody's pass rush? If so, is it possible that Burrow will throw the ball quicker and meaning have more routes to maybe quick dump off passes to say a tight end or something like that? Or whatever answer you would have to the fact we can't block these guys and we have to get rid of the ball quickly. Do you think that that is going to have a big effect on the props, especially for the receivers?
Yeah, I think it could. And maybe a little, more running the ball too. I think that's, if they get behind, they could be in trouble though, given the fact that you're right, they cannot block, and the Rams certainly have a very fearsome pass rush. And I have Burrow projected to be sacked 3.55 times. That is a lot. That is a very large number.
How many?
3.55.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I'm not the X's and O's guy, Todd, but I can see that happening for sure. The thing is, I don't know.
See.
I mean,
okay.
The whole point here is, like, coaches come up with game plans that they don't expect the other team to be ready for and all that stuff. So, if every team knew what the other team exactly was going to do, then it would be a lot easier. And they would not be a very good coach. I also heard
Fezzik talk about this on his radio show about the odds on the yards are not exactly as they should be for a 4.5-point favorite. Something to the effect that the Bengals were a little more inflated. I think I have that right.
They had too many yards projected. Yeah, I mean, someone told me about this too. Someone told me that Fezzik said this. I don't know what that means exactly, though. That like somehow their players are projected for too many yards. But the correlation.
He was saying like this: there are correlation yards that a certain. Like a 4.5-point favorite means that team's going to get, say, 25 more yards in the game. Or I forget exactly what he
said, but
it was something to that extent. I'm not saying.
Oftentimes, oftentimes the team that loses the game
has more yards.
Yeah, because it's especially if you're trailing, you're going to get a lot more yards but fewer points, right? So,
I'm thinking he's talking about on average. But I guess I don't know exactly what he said, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Well, first off, I'll say, it's team specific. I don't know if he's talking about yards for the team overall, like a prop, like how many yards will the Rams and Bengals have? Or is it just like the individual player props and adding those together? Because, I mean, I will say that
he had some kind of correlation to both of those.
Okay.
Okay, I hear you.
I'll have to listen to it. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know how to... where to find the radio show.
I think
show
it was on like some Fox Sports thing that I listened to for a couple minutes and he was talking about it. I found it pretty interesting.
That was which one in specific? That one.
Sorry. No, it wasn't a prop. He was talking about Fezzik was talking about the correlation of the point spread to the yards is off a little bit for one team or the other, meaning a 4.5-point favorite should be a certain amount more yards, and it's not really correct for this game or something. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something to that effect, and I thought maybe Rufus would know about it. But anyways, we could talk more of Rufus's props because I find them interesting.
You got one or two more, Rufus?
I mean, I have lots of props,
please.
but I'm going to respond to what you asked me rather than throw stuff out. How's that sound?
Okay. All right.
How about what's the juiciest one that you think that you love? The juiciest one, like when you first got it, you were like, oh my gosh, this is so juicy.
I don't know. There wasn't that much that was super juicy. I mean, I guess when I first saw Odell Beckham's receiving yards number, like 65.5, but it's gone up since then, and I think it'll keep going up.
You thought it was way too high.
Yeah.
What is the one? I think you already related to one, the touchback. I was going to say, what's the one that you are slightly regretful of? Right?
Oh, I made a bad bet. I made a bet on on Huber not to get a touchback, minus 285 at circa, at the opener. I think I somehow I'd pulled over Circuit Props came out like about 5 minutes before I thought they would, and so I was not at the destination I was hoping to be at. I wasn't home, so I literally had pulled over by the side of the road, pulled out my computer, and was trying to bet these things when they came out. And so I think I literally, well, I kind of did some back of the envelope calculations on that when I didn't have a number ready for it. And then when I actually got into the nitty gritty of it and looked, I found that I wasn't just a bad bet. It was a very bad bet, and I liked the other side of it. So I ended up, but I will say, because they moved the line so much, I ended up betting minus 285 on the no Hubert. Well, I bet plus 290 on the Hubert touchback. And then I came back and bet no at minus 285. So I locked in a little profit with my bad bet. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather not have like had to lay all that money to win that very small amount. But
what's the biggest outlay you have on any of these props? What's the one that is the most?
Probably T. Higgins under receptions, maybe. I don't know.
T. Higgins under receptions. All right.
Under 5.5.
Was there a year that you look back on with Super Bowl props that you remember as the granddaddy of them all, where you made the most hay?
Well, my first 2 years ever betting props were probably like the best in terms of ROI percentage. So the first year I hit, I didn't even watch the game, the Steelers Cardinals Super Bowl. And I still remember telling everybody at the LVSC office, I think Brian Blessing had come around and asked us to predict our final score. And I said 27-23, which ended up being the actual final score.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I should have been betting these like FanDuel exact score of both teams, God. Right?
Yeah.
That was just like, top of my, like, I was like, yeah, it sounds like a reasonable score. But that Super Bowl, I didn't watch it because I was too nervous. I borrowed money from friends. I had people invest in me. I made like I think the money that was bet, I made a $24,000 profit out of like 60,000 invested because I hit Gary Russell first touchdown. That was a big one.
Gary Russell first touchdown.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have a first touchdown for this one?
Yeah. I bet Cam Akers at plus 750 and higher. Oh. I make it plus 670.
Somebody was asking me about that on Twitter today. What do you think about Cam Akers' first touchdown? There you go.
I like it. But the next one, I still remember the end with the Peyton Manning. It was, Saints to beat the Colts. I hit both exact as I hit Reggie, like Manning unders, Wayne unders. I still remember that fourth down pass intended for Wayne going incomplete and like jumping on the shoulders of one of my business partners. And we were just like, oh, because we like basically there, you know, that was a huge leverage play there. If he scores that touchdown, Manning goes over yards. Wayne goes over yards. Manning goes over touchdowns. Like,
oh wow!
And everything, and it all won as a result. Wow. Yeah. So,
how about in the Steelers Super Bowl? I had over 23.5 first half. It's 10-7. Kurt Warner's at the Steeler 4 yard line. There's about 12 seconds left in the first half. I have over 23.5. And I'm just hoping for a touchdown for the Cardinals, right? Because I want it to be 14-10 at the half because I have over 23.5. And he throws it to Harrison. And Harrison is rumbling, bumbling, stumbling down the sideline with a convoy of Steelers and a convoy of Cardinals. And he gets tackled at the what is either the 1 yard line or in the end zone. They call it a touchdown, but it was extremely close on the replay and barely the nose of the ball. And when I see the replay of the play now, I noticed that the guy who made the tackle, Larry Fitzgerald, who came from all the way to the other side, he was standing out of bounds when he first touched Harrison. And I was wondering, if you're standing out of bounds and you're holding a guy, is the guy still considered inbounds or out of bounds?
I think you're out of bounds. I'm pretty sure you're out of bounds. You should be, right? You can't make a tackle from out of bounds.
Wait,
technically,
are you not allowed to be out of bounds when you make? Like, is there some rule against making a tackle while you're touching out of bounds? I don't. What?
Yeah, if you're, I mean, well, think about it.
I've never seen somebody penalized for.
I've never seen it either. But if you watch the replay, you'll notice
if a guy is out of bounds, and he's making a tackle.
Can you tackle a guy?
Can you tackle a guy?
I would assume so.
Really? Why?
I don't know, because I've never seen a rule against it. I've never seen
a penalty. How many times have you seen a guy tackle someone from out of bounds?
I think it's happened. I mean, especially if there's a fumble or something, or like, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
Think about this.
There's a fumble, and there's somebody touching the guy who's out of bounds. Technically, he's the guy. Like, the guy recovers it. He's out of bounds. He's trying to recover it. He's touching the guy. He makes the tackle. That's not a penalty.
Yeah, but how many times have you seen a receiver, and the first contact, the person to have him be ruled down is a guy that's out of bounds making the tackle? I don't think you see that.
No, I feel like you could see it on a fumble recovery, like near the sideline.
No, you'll see the fumble recovery with a guy out of bounds, but I'm saying the tackle.
No, no, no.
Itself.
I'm saying the tackler because he's also going for the fumble. He's out of bounds, like
that happens.
Angled in. Maybe. He's
the guy slides. There's a billion guys sliding towards the sideline, and there's a bunch of guys. Some of them are landing out of bounds. Some of them are landing inbounds. They're touching each other. That happens.
Lots of guys touching each other.
This show is taking a turn with that. I don't know about that, guys. Well, this gives me an opportunity to say two things.
Go back and look at that play. It's amazing because he's standing.
Yeah, I do wonder if that James Harrison touchdown would have withstood replay scrutiny of today. Forget Larry Fitzgerald out of bounds. Would the ball have been ruled over, right?
Yeah, if they had replay.
I know they did, but today seems so much more picayune, right? Today seems so much more scrutinized. The other thing is it gives me an opportunity to say the greatest NFL stat there's ever been. Larry Fitzgerald has more tackles than he has dropped passes in his career.
That's incredible.
That is the most incredible stat.
University of Pittsburgh.
You know what it means? It means that too many interceptions have been thrown to him. He hasn't won enough 50-50 balls, huh?
Is that where you got it out of?
I don't know.
Well, his quarterbacks, he played with a lot of quarterbacks who threw a lot of bad passes. But, that was one of the most – I'll never forget that Super Bowl. I was at the Mandalay Bay, and I'm, like, losing my mind because Harrison intercepts, and now he's rumbling down the sidelines. Do you realize how long that play was?
Oh,
because
forever.
There was literally a convoy of guys, and I'm thinking to myself, if he gets tackled, it's over.
Yeah.
There's no way. That there was, like, five Steelers and six Cardinals running with him. It was incredible.
Yeah.
By the way, Gil,
yes.
I've Googled this. In college football – you can come back in the field of play and make a tackle. I don't know. I don't have an answer for NFL, but
Come back in the field of play. Yes, I'm talking about
and make a tackle.
Yes, when you can come back in the field of play and make one. I'm saying when you're out of bounds. I think you guys are mistaken about that. When you're out of bounds, you're the first person to make contact and tackle. You're not allowed to do that. And you guys are saying,
happens?
You see it all the time. No, you don't.
No, you see it all the time. I'm saying what Rufus is saying is theoretically possible. I remember millions of games where they fumble the ball towards the sideline, and there's six guys over there on the sideline. Some of them are touching out of bounds. Some of them are not. So I could see how what he's saying is also true. I'm not sure.
I love how in the same sentence you're like, no, I'm not saying it happens millions of times, but I've seen it millions of times.
Well, no, but I have seen millions of times fumbles on this near the sideline where guys are rolling around.
Oh,
I don't know what that means.
That for sure, you have to. Yeah, you can't be out of bounds and recover the fumble. But we're talking about tackles here, man. We're talking about tackles.
Right, but what he's saying is, if a guy fell on the ball just like a half a foot by the out of bounds, and another guy from the other team is laying on top of him and half out of bounds, they would call it a tackle, which is kind of similar to this scenario, because they're saying.
Confused. No, I'm just confused.
Let's say you recover the ball a half a yard from the out of bounds, and you're not out of bounds, and there's 1,000 guys jumping on top of you to also get the ball. And some of those people are touching out of bounds and they're on the other team. Are those people credited with the tackle because they're touching you, even though maybe their leg is out of bounds? That's what Rufus is saying.
Yes.
I see what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. I don't know.
I can't find any rule. I have the NFL rule book open here for 2021.
Very exciting here. Yeah.
I'm having trouble finding it.
All right, gentlemen.
It's a big rule book though.
It's a big rule. All right, I think we've done all we can do. Unless Rufus, again, I know you want to be provoked and you want to be prompted. Just one more prop for the people.
One more prop.
Yeah, I know how much exciting that is.
I don't know. I mean, I still have to bet, Bill.
Oh, I know. Well,
I have to bet.
Okay, if
Rufus,
you don't have
how
any
about
more,
this,
then
Rufus?
No more. Then no more.
Rufus, how about this? I know you don't in-game prop bet, but if you did in-game prop bet, what would you be looking to do or not looking to do in a scenario, for example?
Excellent exit question.
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, because I don't know how well these things, the game scenarios, are priced in. You know, maybe
they don't price them.
You don't think they're priced in enough? So
no, they are priced. They are priced. I don't think they're priced to withstand your modeling. Let's put it that way.
Well, I've never modeled in game, so I think they probably are priced to withstand it. But why don't I just give you one more prop I like? Actually, is the score not to be tied after 0-0? I make the price -127. You can get -110. In a lot of places.
The score not to be tied.
Yeah. That doesn't include, like, after a touchdown before the extra point. So it's after, just like for three unanswered scores.
Right.
So, yes, I'm betting that there will not be a tie after 0-0, which is
not be a tie.
Done pretty okay. poorly this postseason, if you were betting that, by the way.
Because there were ties.
Well, yeah, every game ties. Comes back and goes to overtime, and right. it's won by a field goal. I mean, another one in that vein is, will the game be decided by exactly 3 points? No. I've seen that at minus 500 or better. My price is minus 550 on it. Oh. You can actually find that. You can evaluate that one using the unabated alternate lines calculator.
There it is.
If you look at, you put in -4.5 for the line, look, put in alternate line, I can't speak anymore, of -3.5, and then alternate line of -2.5, and look at the difference between those two, calculate the percentages for the implied probabilities, and do the same thing for +2.5 and +3.5. Add those together, you have your chance the game lands on exactly 3.
Okay.
And so I think it's a recency bias because, like, every playoff game, it seems like, has been decided by exactly 3 points. And last week I got burned. I laid minus 700 at the South Point that on the bet Rams will win by exactly 3 points. No.
Oh.
No minus 700.
Brutal.
Ouch.
Great bet. Bad result.
Great bet, bad result.
Well, first and 10 from the 12-yard line, and the idiot runs the ball right into the line to, of course, give us second and 11. You know, there's no way they were going to get the touchdown.
But you know, your reaction there, Rufus, you know what that says? It says that you bet the process.
I bet the process.
That's right.
You got it.
And you got to be comfortable with that.
By the way, here's one that I would like to just say real quick. Cam Akers, if the Rams get behind, you can bet all the Cam Akers you want running under, because they'll abandon the run. They're not going to run that much anyways, but even if they were to run, they're going to run because they're ahead. If they're behind, they're going to throw that football. And I don't think Cam Akers is going to get his yards, and I don't think they'll bring it down far enough. So, for instance, if Cam Akers has, say, 10 yards early and they're down 21-7 somehow, you know, and then now they move it from whatever it is now to, like, say, 40 or 35, bet it under. Cam Akers ain't going to get the ball if they're down.
I love it. I like that, Todd. Very nice. Again, here in the state of Nevada, sure wish you could bet that kind of way.
I think similarly Mixon as well, but just because of what Rufus said about Pirine, but to be more in the passing game, I think it's even more so for the Rams.
I would say the Bengals, it seems like they won't abandon. No, they don't. They say fairly balanced. I mean, of course, if you're down big, you're going to abandon at some point, but I mean, Mixon, they were down, what was the score on their final drive before halftime? It was 21-3. They're still running the ball. Yeah. They were still they still had Mixon in. They were still running the ball.
That's true.
They were, which is funny. I was Najee like, why Harris are they doing that? And it, yeah.
Najee Harris is the one guy that they messed the props up for, because the Steelers will even run down 29-0 against Minnesota. And the Steelers were down a zillion times this year. And usually you means you can just play the running backs under for those teams and usually win. But you can't with Najee, because they're always going to give it to Najee. They never abandon the run, even though they can't even run. But it's kind of interesting.
Can't run, can't pass.
Lose That's yourself. First song. First song, Super Bowl halftime show. Lose yourself. If you remember nothing else from this podcast, lose yourself.
I thought
yourself.
It was Love Yourself. It's not Love Yourself, it's Lose Yourself.
That's a whole different show. It's a whole different show, Todd. That does it for the Megapod. That does it for the Megapod for the year. For the year.
For the year?
For the season, anyway.
There's no off season?
Yeah, no, I do. I'm going to do tennis grand slams. I've committed to doing tennis grand slams. Moving a little, drifting from baseball over time, moving towards tennis. And plus, we don't even know if there's going to be baseball, for God's sakes. I mean, it's just ridiculous. That was the best tweet during that Chiefs-Bills masterpiece was Dan Heron, the former Major League Baseball pitcher, tweeting, just so you guys know, baseball's in a lockout. Right in the middle of the Bills and the Chiefs' dramatic finish. That was awesome. Just as a juxtaposition.
I just hope there's baseball so I can heckle Tim Anderson and have him yell back at me like that,
yes.
like last year.
Yes.
And then Gilly saw me on ESPN waving
Tim Anderson home behind the dugout. God wish Nev putting his.
By the way, I can't believe he actually started screaming back at me. It was hysterical.
Putting his weight on the scale. We look forward to random college basketball tournaments where you heckle as well.
I went to the Duquesne St. Bonaventure game and I put up some videos, but the problem is there was too many people there, and it was too loud in the stands. It's much better when I got to go to like a Robert Morris game. Robert Morris is out in Moon Township.
How's your golf betting going, by the way?
I mean, I had a great year last year. I'm not a great start to the season so far, down a little bit, but so we'll it's what we're 5 weeks into the year or something. But yeah. Todd, I'm going to tease something for you. at Unabated, we're coming out with in the next few weeks a tool for in-game college basketball betting, basically value of points. So, like, you see -3.5 with 3 minutes to go. This is the score differential, whatever. I don't know. What's -2.5? What's -4.5? Like, how much are those points worth? So, if you're line shopping between books, I think that's
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to definitely check that out. And college basketball has turned around for me. Last year, I had an amazing season. This year, I was down for about the first month and a half, and now I've turned it around and I'm up in college basketball. So college basketball has been, you know, it's starting to really turn to the upside for me. The one thing that you may notice, I don't know if you noticed this, Rufus, but you may not watch a lot of college basketball. They don't foul as much late in college basketball as they were in previous years. So in the past, if a team was ahead by, like, say, 5 points with 45 seconds left, they would foul immediately. And this year, they're not doing it as much. It's very interesting.
Why do you think that is, Todd?
Analytics?
I think there's too much NBA influence. The kids are – I think that the coaches – are starting to think, okay, well, we have a better chance if we can just get a stop down five and then hit a three with 15 seconds left and then go from there. I don't know whether they're right or they're wrong. To me, it still seems like you have a better chance of these kids missing the free throws and you should foul sooner, but they don't seem to be doing it. The other thing that is just an incredible pet peeve is they don't know that how to do the two-for-ones at the end of the first half.
No,
if they have the
ball
with 52 seconds left, it's unbelievable. It drives you absolutely crazy. So, you know, anybody who says, oh, well, when did you ever coach a college basketball game? I don't need to coach a college basketball game to know some of these things are moronic.
My biggest pet peeve is the whole thing about if you're ahead – I hope I'll say this right. If you're ahead in a college basketball game and you're trying to milk clock – some of these teams immediately inbounds the ball. Just take your time. The clock is moving.
It just keeps running. You could the ball could drift away, and it's like,
They race to inbounds it, and then they have a jacked up possession when they should have been wasting the time at the front end of that possession anyway, right? And it's just brain dead basketball. Drives me nuts.
Take 4 seconds every time to inbound it. Just stand there and be like, okay, 1, 2,
Games have been won and lost on that kind of stuff. Because that stuff adds up. All right.
But you know what? You know, we've never coached basketball, so I don't think we know.
Yeah, we must not know anything. All right, Todd, thank you for a season's worth. Mike Palm, in memoriam. I don't know where he is, but he's a father.
You guys broke up on me at the end. I can't hear you.
Well, we're just saying thank you for doing the podcast for the whole year, Todd. We appreciate it, man. Thank you for all your efforts, all your songs. You know what your best performance was? That one show where you were totally serious. You were awesome.
I wish I could hear you.
Oh, he can't hear me. Anyway.
Being serious?
Todd, on one with Chris and Adam Chernoff a couple weeks ago was spectacular. Rufus, thank you very much, sir. Twice this year. Maybe not as fun as doing our numbers game thing where we just talk about everything else besides sports. But we'll get back to that eventually.
Nah, I mean, sports is my life, too.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. Good luck with Super Bowl 56 with all your bets. Thanks for listening. The Beating the Book podcast will be back. Tennis, golf, whole bunch of stuff. The NFL draft, we'll do all of it in the offseason. Thanks for listening.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.